Norm Davis, Town of Prescott Valley.
Allison Lemonker, Coalition for Compassion and Justice.
Kendall Schumacher, Town of Prescott Valley, Councilmember.
Terry Nolan, Mayor of Town of Dewey Humboldt and St. Paul, Executive Board Member.
David Hernandez, Freeport McMoran Bagot.
Rick McNeil, Commute with Enterprise.
Becky Stahl, Commute with Enterprise.
Ready back here. Good morning, everybody. My name's Kristen Darr. I'm part of the project team.
And Dan Marum with Wilson & Company, also part of the Nelson Nygaard team. I work with Wilson & Company. Thank you.
Okay, we're on the wall.
Heather Conferenti, Yavapai County Public Health.
Sherry Hanna, candidate, Yavapai County Board of Supervisors, District 1.
Dana Harmonic, Simpo.
Allison McCarthy, Simpo.
Matt Conover, Nelson Nygaard.
Bethany Whitaker, Nelson Nygaard.
Okay, so I think we got everybody. So just a quick reminder, if you didn't get signed in when you came in, please do so. We're going to go through a bit of the presentation here, probably take a short break. There's a restroom out in the hallway over here if you need it, and I believe a drinking fountain. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bethany.
Great. Thanks, Chris. All right, thank you guys for coming. This is a great big group, and I'm really excited to kind of try to move through this idea of how we're going to develop public transportation services in Central Yavapai. So we did the introductions already. I'm going to walk through the results of a survey that we issued, and then Matt Conover from Nelson Nygaard, he's going to talk about the recommended transit service plan. And then we'll hopefully take a short break at that time, and then come back and talk about how we could govern this entity and then how we might fund it. So kind of saving the best for last, but depends what you're interested in. So survey results, I think we talked about this last time that we had a stakeholder meeting. We did a survey. The survey was available online. We also distributed it on paper. So some of the service providers and some of the agencies handed it out to clients and constituents. The idea was that we wanted to clarify what people thought about public transit, what sort of attributes would make them more likely to use it, and just sort of test and understand people's interests and attitudes. We got 399 responses. Just over 300 of those were done online, and part of the way that we got people to fill it out online, I should mention this, Chris and Daniel and the Simpo staff at the Home and Garden store, they were there with a kiosk and a laptop, and they had people fill it out there. They also advertised it on their Facebook site and did some other social media. So for a survey of this size, we feel like 400 responses is a pretty good result. Some of the findings were really interesting. So we did ask the question, do you ever have transportation problems? It's a very general question. Slightly more than half said yes, they sometimes have transportation problems. And then we gave them a list of choices of what kind of problems those might be. And the ones that people said most frequently were the cost of commuting, that it's very expensive. We know that intuitively in this region because some of the distances between communities is quite great. Also traffic. And then a lot of people said that they really wanted another choice. And then the issues with transportation, like people were more likely to say that they had problems, and again, I don't think this is so surprising, is people who have lower incomes, and then also with people who don't always have reliable access to a vehicle, right? So we did ask people, we had some demographic questions in our survey, and one of them was, do you always, sometimes, or never have access to a vehicle? So if you only sometimes had access or you never had access, you're more likely to have transportation problems. Not surprising. We also asked people just directly if we had a public transit system, would you use it? About 60% that said that they would use it, and 23% said that they were unsure. So I think that that's pretty good findings. And then we also did break it down by some of the demographic questions. This graph shows how people answered that question based on age. And one of the findings that we took away from the survey report, and the survey report will be available on Simpo's website so you can look at the whole thing. I'm just presenting some of the highlights today, is that there is a desire among the younger population, the younger people in the region, for public transit. And so when we asked this question, you can see people aged 18 to 24 and 25 to 34 were more likely to say that yes, they would use it, or that they were unsure. And then these blue pieces here where they said no is quite small. So we thought that that was an interesting finding. We also asked people what would encourage them to ride the bus, what features were most important to them, and they could select up to three with this. And so the one that people said the most important is that the bus stops within walking distance. So I think that's intuitive. Also that the service is predictable and reliable also should be important to people. There's a covered waiting area at the bus stop was the number third highest. And of course that means just people want to have some protection from the weather if they're standing out on the street. We also, and so in the survey report, you can also look at this data and see how people of different ages or in different, if whether they live in Prescott, Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, or Dewey-Humboldt, how they responded. So there's some nuance and stuff that I'm not going to present today, but if you're interested, you can take a look at that. So we also asked people a series of questions, and we said, do you agree with this statement? Are you unsure, or do you disagree? And this is the results overall. We asked them, I will take, you know, to agree, I will take the bus, even if it's a little bit longer, as long as the fare is low. And then you can see the dark red is the people that said yes, and then blue said they're not sure, and yellow said no. We asked, had this statement, I don't think the Quad Cities needs bus service. So this was one we were trying to catch people a little bit so that they had to read the question and they didn't just tick yes, yes, yes to everything. And it did work. Well, depends what you think. But a large people answered negatively to that. And you can see how the bars kind of flip. We asked, I would adjust my schedule slightly to take the bus. Again, most people said they agreed with that or they were unsure. We need better sidewalks and crosswalks before we start bus service. This was one where a lot of people said they were unsure about that. A lot of people said yes, and a lot of people said no. It kind of split down the middle. And I think that that would be one of the challenges if we move forward with the public transit system. I'm willing to walk a few minutes to a bus stop. People generally said yes to that. I could save money by taking a bus. Again, a little bit lower response, but people did respond to that. Just to show you a little bit more detail, this is that question. I don't think that the Quad Cities needs public or bus service. I'm showing you this by community, and I think Prescott Valley had the lowest rate of people disagreeing with that statement. So, and then followed by Prescott, Dewey-Humboldt. Surprisingly, nobody said that they didn't want to have bus service. But again, it's a small sample, so from the Dewey-Humboldt responses, but that was kind of a interesting finding. So, and then just to show you of the people who filled out the survey, I did say there was about not quite 400, pretty well distributed in the region based on existing population. Most came from Prescott or Prescott Valley, and then we had a handful from Chino Valley and Dewey-Humboldt. The employment status, about half of the people were employed, roughly a third were retired, and then we had some parents, people were self-employed, students, unemployed, people employed part-time. And then people access, I mentioned this question, access to a personal vehicle. Most people did have access to a personal vehicle, but then there's another 12 or 15% who don't always have that vehicle. So that's just kind of a high level overview of the surveys. I can take a minute. Does anybody have any questions? Yes, sir.
I do. There was a question in the survey that asked if they were willing to pay a tax in regards to having the system provided.
No, we did not ask that question.
We did not ask that question, no. Why not?
Because I think we were asking people to understand what they wanted from the surveys and what their attitudes were. And the question that most closely resembles that was like, if you don't think we need it. But we did not pointedly ask that question. Yes, Norman.
Definitely the work scope had the Yavapai College Scientific Survey. Are those involved in here or is that separate?
They did do a review of our survey instrument and provided some comments which we took. And then we just talked about it before the meeting where we can give them the data set. They could do some additional analysis if they want to.
So what was the scope of the psychologist's involvement, I guess?
Could you repeat the question?
Oh, the question was, so in our scope of work, Yavapai College was part of, they were involved in the survey task, and then Norm's just asking what they did and how they were involved. And so Nelson Nygaard drafted the survey, we shared that with the Yavapai College, they provided some comments on it, and then we adjusted the survey based on those comments. Yep. Yes, sir, ma'am.
Did we have any questions from anybody that asked how would we pay for the service?
No.
I mean, I know we didn't ask it on the survey, but I mean, just in conversation with any people at all.
We have been having a lot of conversations about how we would pay for the service, and that's going to be a big part of the meeting today.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Would you please repeat each question as it's asked?
Okay, because talking into the mic helps everybody.
Because from the back, we don't hear up front.
Okay. So she asked, You asked if we have had conversations about funding, even if we did. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I know that Supervisor Brown asked, was there a question on the survey about funding? And the answer was no. I'm asking, in a conversation among the community, has that been a question from any of the community verbally? How would we pay for that, you know?
Right.
And so, we're going to talk about that, you said, today. So
right. So her question was, have we had any verbal conversations about how we're going to pay for a transit service with among the community members? And we have. We've had a whole series of stakeholder interviews, some of which have been conducted by the Nelson Nygaard team, some conducted by Kristen Darr from Creative Central. And so we've been talking to a lot of people about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Oh, Lindsay.
A comment rather than a question. I was familiar with the transit survey that was done with the first transit implementation plan, which is now 10 years ago. And I find it interesting that it's very consistent in terms of percentage of the respondents. I think it was like 56 or 57% of folks said we need a transit system. What was different is the demographic of the people that responded. Because 10 years ago, it was not the millennials that were responding to that. It was the who said that they would definitely be likely to use transit. It was the seniors that were responding to that. So that's a change, even though the overall percentage is about the same as it was 10 years ago.
Right, so are you saying that the survey, the people who completed the surveys was similar, or no?
Well, I think we have,
we have more younger people. And then Chris, I heard Chris say part of that was because we use social media to get the survey out there, so that might have helped us sample a different demographic. But then, yeah, I mean, and especially if you look at the survey report, you'll see that there is a lot of interest from the younger demographic, that 18 to 24 and then 25 to 34, there's a lot of interest in transit from that demographic group.
It was a bigger sample. There were like 1,200, I think, surveys returned, but definitely the proportion of the population of respondents was skewed to the seniors and people with disabilities, and there were fewer younger people, 30 and under, that responded. But overall, it was similar results about, are you likely to use transit in the future?
Okay. Could you hear that? She's okay. Okay. So, Matt, you ready? Okay.
So, I'm going to talk a little bit about the service design, how we got to where we did. At the end, I'm going to ask you folks to engage with me a little bit and tell me what you think about it, because this is the final, this is what we're presenting. But I do want to get consensus in this room, so I want to take you through and make sure we're really clear about all the effort that went into it and how we got to where we did. Again, we won't get to the funding and everything until the end, but just service design. So the first thing was we were tasked with designing transportation service that would meet the market demands. And as part of that, I'll talk about it a little bit, we did a market research study. We wanted to align with community goals. We wanted to garner stakeholder support. And we heard very loud and clear at the beginning of the study that a lot of prior studies had been done. And it resulted in a menu of options. And so with service planning, it's very easy to say, you could provide service in Prescott that looked like this, demand response, or it could be fixed route, or it could be deviated route or some other form, and then just cost it out and say it's up to you as the community to decide that. But we heard loud and clear not to do that, that you guys needed a plan that was implementable, that could be put on the street immediately. And so we did that. But we also heard that we had to balance all those different things, the stakeholder needs, the community needs, and all that. I should have asked to been taken off the project right then and there, but I didn't do that. So I hung in and we came up with that, and you'll kind of see how that took shape. So I mentioned we did a market analysis. You can see the map up in the corner of the screen there. So we look at population, employment density. We also look at social economic factors, demographic factors that determine who is likely to ride public transportation based on census and demographic information. You can see pretty clearly the spots, the concentrated areas, Prescott Valley, and then there's the blip up there in Chino Valley. Those show up as areas of high demand, areas that we know that if we provide public transportation service, it is likely to be utilized. That underlying tone drove the the system design that you'll see in the next few slides. We also conducted some extensive research here with the stakeholders. Many of you participated in a planning game in which we led folks design different public transportation services by putting lines on a map and showing us where the route should go. In some cases, that mirrored some similarities to what's out there currently, some service that exists. In a lot of cases, it was quite a bit different. And so what we heard was maybe that there needs to be some different type of service to really meet the needs of all the stakeholders that are engaged in this process. When we design the service, we function on a few key principles. We use this in all of our service design, and the crux of all of them is that transportation service needs to be easy for customers to understand, so it's easy for them to use. Anytime you create a barrier to a customer, the route doesn't operate inbound and outbound on the same street. You have to know which side of the road to get on to begin with, but now all of a sudden I have to know, do I have to be on First Street or Third Street? You want it to be consistent throughout the day, so if you operate service on Monday, it should be similar to the service or the same as the service rather that you operate on Tuesday. If you're gonna operate weekend service, keep it the same. The more people have to understand, the more people have to learn about the system, the more difficult it is for them to engage with it and the less likely they are to use it. So at the beginning, these maps are kind of small up there, but we had two conceptual ideas that we started off with. One was heavily focused on fixed route transportation service. The other one was more focused on what we call demand response, or has sometimes been called dial-a-ride type services with some regional connections. And so you can see the key difference there between the two is we have this Prescott Valley connector, and that is a more frequent service really focused on jobs in the first option. And the second option, that goes away.
There's a pointer somewhere.
Oh, thank you. The red route right there, that was focused on getting jobs between the two core areas. You saw that demand map, so we really focused on that with some regional connectivity up to Chino and then down to Dewey-Humboldt. In the second option, we came up with these kind of square areas, that on-call on-demand service that I talked about. And so while there is a regional connection, it's much less frequent in that option, and we're really focused on getting people around within their localized communities and then using those inner city connections to get people to and from the different communities. And what we heard was neither of these two really meet the demands that we see, what the stakeholders want, what the community wants. And so it needs to be some kind of blend of all those options. And so we went back to the drawing board and we came up with this blended solution, which you can see has a mix of those things. So you can see coming down from Chino Valley, we have a blue route. It goes into Prescott. We also have a red route between Prescott and Prescott Valley. And then we have this green route from Prescott through Prescott Valley into Dewey-Humboldt with some demand response overlays in Prescott and Prescott Valley. We also are similar to what YRT does now. We've proposed a flex service, so that means that the route would actually flex a half mile from its current location to pick somebody up who would call in or could request that service if they did not have access to the actual route, couldn't make it to the route alignment as it was. So we've blended them here. You can see it's a little bit of a mix of all that. It's a little different than any of the service that's currently out there today. We did propose service Monday through Saturday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. The red route there, that core route I said was focused on jobs, that would run every 60 minutes, so that's hourly service. The rest of the service, the blue route coming from Chino Valley into Prescott, that would be three trips a day, weekday and Saturday. And then for Dewey-Humboldt, we have three trips on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So 3 days a week, three trips. The demand response would operate from 6 to 6 on Monday through Saturday. You can see there's connections to all of those different functions, primarily in Prescott, so anything could be transferred. We would time those transfers in the service design. The idea would be to provide complete connectivity within the region and synchronize all the different services there so that folks could interact with them to get to where they need to be. In addition to that, I will also comment that we had three van pools added. Again, we heard from some of the younger community that they were looking for transportation. We know that a lot of those are working age folks. We know that jobs and employment is a huge driver for transportation. So in addition to the services that you see here, we propose the addition of three van pool services that we primarily focused on getting people to and from jobs. So I've kind of covered all this, but you can see that employment market's covered. We're also providing connectivity to medical, shopping service, education facilities. So a lot of the streets here don't have full sidewalks, aren't connected, so we understand the reality that that route has to pull up in some of these shopping centers. It has to come around the front door of the hospital so that people can have those access points. And so as part of costing it, when we consider how long it takes to operate the route, we need to know the miles, hours of service, all that's been built in so that we can serve multiple different markets and not just focus on one specific market. We also have the regional connectivity to all the different cities, and then we have the local circulation through those demand response options, as well as through the flex route option, which I said will deviate to half a mile in our model. So the cost of that, that's $1.8 million to do. Again, we'll talk a little bit about how that's all comprised later on after the break, but you can just see how we did it. You can also see where we focus services, and that will start to pair up with what we heard the stakeholders say. It'll start to pair up where you see the funding sources coming from. So we really do feel like this service model very closely matches what we heard from the survey, what we heard from the stakeholders, what we saw in that market demand analysis, and what we've heard from the community. As part of this, we've also considered some emerging mobility options, some new technology. So in the last 3 years, public transportation services have really experienced a robust influx of new modern features. So I described some of those flex route services or those demand response or on-call services as on-call. The traditional method was dial ride. You had to call in presumably 24 hours in advance, or if you could even do it further in advance, that was great. You'd schedule, they'd put you down on the paper, they'd tell you we could be there between 8 and 9 a.m. to pick you up, and then that's your pickup window. They pick you up, drop you off, and reverse the commute. Well, new technologies, so some of us are familiar with app-based programs, which we can call rides. Taxis have kind of moved to some of this stuff. There's also TNCs, we call them transportation network companies. I think Uber and Lyft are probably the most famous that do that and kind of started that technology, but now public transportation has developed its own brand and its own style of that. So public transportation providers, communities, municipalities can actually go out to bid and contract with these technology companies to either outfit their own vehicles with some of this technology or to actually contract with them for vehicles that are outfitted with this technology. So you get that same level of performance that you do from those app-based companies, but now it's happening in a public transportation realm, which we know to be safer, more reliable, has all the normal FTA kind of requirements associated with it.
I have a question on your previous slide.
Sure.
Go back. Okay, that $1.8 million, does that include equipment and salaries and everything else?
It does. The question was, does the $1.8 million cover equipment and salaries? And I said yes.
Can I voice an opinion? 6 to 6 is not enough. Even if you run every hour afterwards on the half hour or on the hour, there are people that work, and not everybody quits working at 5 o'clock. Take the department stores, they work later. And to get the bad drivers off the road, I went voluntarily, and I was not a bad driver. But you have to consider the working class. And you've got to, when you do get a bus, you got to make sure there's a low step, not a high step. There are buses that, when you open the door, there's a step that goes lower to the ground, which is what you have to consider.
So the comment was 6 to 6 does not work for everybody's employment needs, particularly within the service industry, which we know there to be a lot of jobs here. I agree totally. It comes down to funding and the amount of money available to pay. So we focused on the 6 to 6 where we could. We in particular felt that the Saturday edition was very important to the service industry. That's why we focused on Saturday rather than weekday only to provide some of that. So it is a balance there and a trade-off, and that was where we landed based on what we heard from stakeholders. I think that the dollars could be, you know, we could get rid of the Saturday service and give later service on weekdays. That's a trade-off that, you know, I'm happy to entertain and to hear from you folks. The other comment was on vehicles. Low floor accessibility is better than having to step up. We certainly agree with that. There are a lot of new vehicles on the market. The cost approximately the same as the current cutaway vehicles with the steps that allow for that. So that will absolutely be included as a thought in this process.
So another option is we could look at 6 to 8 and then see what the extra cost might be.
Absolutely, yeah. It's right now I think we're at $80 an hour, and so any hour of service you add is just $80 times the number of days that you operate it. So
one other thing.
So this includes maintenance, fuel, the buses themselves, all the materials, all the management and all the supervision, all the drivers and all that, and you're going to do it for $1.8 million.
The question was, again, does this include everything it takes to run the service? The answer is yes.
How many buses?
I should cheat. 6. Yes.
How often will the bus run?
So the red route will run hourly. The blue route would run 6 total trips, 3 in, 3 out. The green route would run on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Again, 6 total trips, 3 in, 3 out.
But
the demand response.
Saying how often? You're telling me how many, but you're not saying how often will the bus run?
Once an hour.
Now that's not
for
all
3 hours.
That's
the red route.
Just that one route.
Right.
Does the $1.8 million take in local money, or are we adding in federal grants with that?
So the question was, does the $1.8 million include federal grants? That will be discussed later.
Well, so, and I'll just say, I mean, yeah, we want to have the funding conversation separately, but the 1.8 is the cost of the service, and then we'll talk about how we're going to pay for it.
I've got it. So I'm familiar with another system that's being implemented currently in the county, and what I'm being told is by having this route that you also have to include and pay for a fairly robust demand service that is going to fall outside of what you're accounting for as a regular fixed route. And so I'm not seeing that that's part of your budget.
So the question was, and make sure I get this right, public transportation service requires what you call demand service, or is more industry technical term is paratransit service for ADA individuals. You are required, if you have a fixed route service that is not commuter based, not peak or not rush hour only, you have to have that service. So the way that that's handled in this model is that half a mile flex route service provides that. Now you do have to go 3/4 of a mile from the flex route, but it's baked into that. So we're saying a half a mile within the zone, but we know that the ADA individuals will also be included, so they will be covered by that flexibility of the fixed route service.
Thank you.
Yes. Lindsay Bell.
The next slide where you're talking about the technology and being able to do real-time request for the demand response zones, does that also apply to the flexing on the flex routes? If I want that half mile deviation on the red route, for example, can I call it up on my phone in real time, or do I have to make a reservation 24 hours or 48 hours out?
So the question was, does this technology that I discussed work on if you want to do the flex? And that's the next slide, which is that it certainly is an option to do it on the flex. Yes, you would see the bus, you could track it, you could follow it, you could request it. You could do it by traditional telephone, call in and ask for that. You could do it by an app on a smartphone. You could also do it on a PC where you had internet access to make the request. Ron?
Looking at the map, I'm a little bit concerned. I talked to Bethany a little bit about it this morning. Currently, we're running the system, the Yavapai Regional Transit System in Chino Valley to be able to pick up all these people that are coming into Prescott or on Wednesdays going into Prescott Valley. You've eliminated all of our pickups, what we call the gold route. You've eliminated that completely. And, you know, we're estimating over 10,000 rides this year, of which over 7,000 of them start with Chino Valley or finish in Chino Valley. And it's, I can't really support the loss of an entire town, since we're the only ones over the last 10 years that have provided any kind of transportation, public transportation system for the Tri-City area. And I saw it yesterday and my brain wasn't in gear, or we'd have discussed it then, but I have a real problem with that. You're basically doing what we're doing right now, and I don't have a problem with that at all. But we're coming in four times a day on a weekday. I like the Saturday thing. If we can afford it, we're going to expand to Saturdays because our customers are wanting that. But the loss of Chino Valley and the way all those people get up, and I don't have a problem with your Uber and all that kind of stuff. Uber. I'm old, I don't even know how to spell it. But the thing of it is that on paper sounds like it's going to work out really well, but when you got to travel all the way about 15 miles to Chino and 15 miles back trying to get an Uber, we have problems getting some of the conventions that we work with. They have a problem getting Uber. We tell them, be back at the bus at 10 o'clock because we can't guarantee an Uber. You know, I'm just having a real hard time with the system, with the gold route, eliminating the gold route.
So Ron's comment was that there's currently a gold route which operates in Chino Valley. It's not shown here on the map as it is. He's absolutely right. There's no two ways about it. I will say that the blue route does follow similar alignment, but it is only operating three trips as compared to you said four, right? And it does operate in a loop. There are approximately, in the data set that we had, 11 passengers a day that board the gold route. So we looked at that information. We looked at where the key areas of demand were. If I go back to that demand map, we also heard what the stakeholders had to tell us. And so that's how this service was designed. It definitely is a little bit less service up in the Chino Valley area, but that was, again, like I talked about, the different kind of trade-offs that we had to make based on the available funds. That was one of the trade-offs that was made. I hear you loud and clear, Ron, but I think that's good to air and get this whole group aware of.
Just to put a number to it, Matt, it's 50 service hours per week that are being eliminated in Chino Valley and replaced by zero.
Well, the blue route's not zero, right?
Well, we have the red route and the green route and the blue route that perform that inner city service now, and I didn't count those hours.
Okay.
So why can we not work with this to make this all work together?
Well, I certainly think that you can work through it. There are conversations that can be had in different ways to tool it together. I will say, as part of this, whenever we talk about the funding, you'll see that we leveraged some of the 53, not some, we leveraged the $53.11 to be able to provide this service. So there just has to be trade-offs. But money, conversations, partnerships, looking for alternative solutions, some of this app-based stuff that I've talked about, it can be provided actually cheaper than the $80 an hour that I've proposed. So if they're depending on what final decisions are made, there do become more options to leverage more of those trade-offs to turn the dial back.
Matt, one to clarify for the audience, one of the things that YRT is we're a 5311 grantee, which is a rural grant from the feds. If the population is over 50,000, which Prescott and Prescott Valley are, they have to go to a different grant, which is a 5307. We are a nonprofit. We cannot qualify for a 5307 grant. And we don't have any problem bringing people in from Chino Valley or that area. We're going to cut back a lot of service hours we're doing right now. But if it can be serviced better by a 5307,
That was the goal when we first started this whole thing 10 years ago. So we've accomplished that goal if we get a 5307. We will move, but we can't afford to lose half of our budget, just like Sandy was saying. What we have discussed, kinda, has been expanding out to Paulden, maybe going to Ash Fork, and helping those people come in into Prescott. We don't have a problem coming in and dropping our people off at a terminal here, and then they disperse and we pick them up and take them back, which most 5311s do to a 5307 system. But we don't have a 5307 system, and we're constantly fighting ADOT because their position is, we're not gonna spend 5311 money in a 5307 area. They won't even let us put in, I don't know if there's any ADOT people here.
Ron, I have a question for Ron, because he made a point. How many days a week do you operate currently?
5 days a week.
5 days a week, so not six, one business.
No, and
how many buses do you have?
Five.
You have five buses. Do they operate all 5 days a week?
Not all of the buses. We have to have one for spare, but
so you got a 20% to keep on.
Right.
Okay. How many people do you have that are volunteers?
Well, that's hard to say because like,
are you a volunteer?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, your wife.
Yes. And
Sandy's
half-time volunteer.
And we've got the council member from Chino is a volunteer time.
And a lot of our drivers volunteer their time.
What I'm getting at is this is all overhead. It's not reflected in what they currently provide. It does not even a third of what they're saying as far as area coverage. So this $1.8 million, I'm sorry, I can't believe it.
Well, I think one of the things that...
What's your budget?
Our budget is $500,000.
One third.
Yeah. But I think one of the things is the requirements from the federal government of what we have to do, even as a rural transit system, we still have to provide a lot of extra, and it's a lot of extra overhead that we have to do to satisfy. And when you go to 5307, it's going to be even more than that. The administration, the overhead, is going to cost a lot more. I mean, I hate to be thrown under the bus, but
there's a transit check there.
But I think there's ways of doing it, but I think you have to look at the public-private partnership part. You have to look at some other things to be able to bring this transit system in. But I think it's going to be higher than the cost that we have.
So we will talk about the cost, like I said, a little bit more down the road. Happy to talk and show you guys the spreadsheet and everything like that. You can take a look at it. What I would like to do to keep us on time, though, because I'm hearing a lot of good feedback and a lot of good comments, is talk about some things that we've pointed out here on the service. So one is later. I heard 8 p.m., so we can look at extending service to 8 p.m. I've heard Chino Valley has a cut in service hours. We want to see what we can do to keep that whole and not give them a cut in service hours. So those are two changes to this up there. Are there any other comments about the proposed service model? Lindsay.
A question about the Chino Valley issue. Will the flex route and use of the flex route on the blue route, will that help bring back in some of the passengers that are currently being served by the gold route, or is it totally different places?
So the question was, does the blue route as it is proposed on this map do anything to offset that gold route elimination? So in terms of service hours, Sandy already made it clear that there is a green route, there's the blue and yellow, or red route, excuse me, that do similar things. So those all have a similar alignment. So the alignment itself, very close to the gold. The flex itself very close to the gold. The gold actually flexes 1 mile, is that right? So we've cut that down to a half a mile instead of 1 mile to be able to circle that bus around and get it back down to Prescott in time. But yes, there is some of the people that currently can access the gold route, in fact, the majority of the ridership that we see on the gold route can be handled on this blue route, whether or not the timing is the same with the flex option.
Okay.
You can do that 30 minutes.
Right. Yeah. And we did budget 30 extra minutes for that bus to go around Chino Valley every single trip, every single time it goes. Terry.
Yeah. I appreciate what you're doing, and I know everybody wants, door-to-door service. But you can't start out that way. Maybe, you know, you start with this and then work it out and improve it as we go.
Yeah, so Terry's comment was that you can always build a little more, I think, and so you got to start off with something, and that's what we proposed here. And
you made a comment just a second ago with regards to cutting back Chino Valley to a half a mile. When we first started as Chino Valley Transit, we did a half a mile. We couldn't pick the people up. It's acreage out there, so we extended to a mile. And the higher density in Prescott and Prescott Valley, that's when we went back to a quarter or half a mile, whatever we have on there, because we can pick up more people there. So you need to put that in your equation. It's just like Dewey-Humboldt. They got acreage out there. They got farms and ranches and stuff like that. And when you stick with that 1 mile because of the time, or half mile with the time constraints, you'll make your time, but you won't pick up that many people. You don't have the density.
So Ron's comment was to the point of some of the things that we've talked about with this Gold Route and the mile coverage that it has, we're not capturing everybody here, and so maybe consideration there for extended mileage, extended coverage, I should say, and then that would also probably mean more time to be able to get the vehicle back to where it needed to go.
So I just want to point out that there is this really fundamental trade-off in what we're trying to do here, right? So we are using public resources. We want to be as efficient and effective with those resources as possible. And so what I appreciate what Ron's saying is that there's a lot of acreage in Dewey-Humboldt and in Chino Valley, but there's not a lot of people. So if we want to take our resources and pick up some of those people that are outside of the primary urbanized areas, we can design a system to do that. It's your cost per rider is going to be higher, or you have to spend more in the system overall to provide that service. And so this system is designed to be to sort of balance those two things, right? Like one, making sure that we design a system that's simple, consistent, easy to use, easy to understand, and it replicates, right? So I think one of the big differences between what we're proposing and something that the YRT service is that the service would be the same every single day, Monday through Saturday. And that consistency makes it easier for people to use. It makes it easier for people to schedule around. But the trade-off for that is that the footprint of the service is a little bit smaller. And so those are the trade-offs that we need to agree on, because, you know, I think we all know this from life and from in public service, the more, you know, the idea is to be really focused on what you're trying to do and set clear goals and accomplish those goals. And if you try to do everything, that's usually where you start to trip up.
Terry?
Yeah, I know in Chino they do all that extra stuff, but in Dewey-Humboldt we could probably do a park and ride issue or situation type thing so that, you know, at least get it started. And, you know, I think that's the main thing. We can do a park and ride down there. You know, just pick out a space where you're going to have a pickup point and drop off point and do that. I'm sure the people will be happy.
Yeah, so Terry's saying there's other ways to kind of go about this to get people to the system. A park and ride is one option. Now, I will say in Dewey-Humboldt, we do have the same kind of circulation as we've talked about in Chino. So there are different ways to balance that to get people to the system. Absolutely. All right.
Question right
here. Yes, please.
A couple of questions. One, back home we had a service that it would pick up seniors and they would pay for the ride. The same as people who care take you. But they would take you anywhere. People Who Care, which is a wonderful organization, I've used them for the last 5 years, will take you to doctors and shopping. Any place you live will take you to doctors and shopping, to certain stores. If you want to go to a different store, you have to be fortunate enough to have a child that is retired that can take you there, or you hire somebody to take you. Till you get this bus thing in operation, could you do that? Also, Prescott used to have a bus that went in one direction. And it was subsidized, it was provided by one man. And when he said he couldn't do it anymore, Prescott wouldn't help him. Now, couldn't Prescott have used government money to subsidize that?
So there are two questions. One was similar services, human service agencies that exist right now, such as People Who Care, can this service provide that? We don't want to build a service that competes with People Who Care and New Horizons and the other human service agencies that are out there. Those exist and those are already performing a valuable service, and they are spending a lot of money doing it. So our goal is to not compete with them, but to build something that will supplement and support them. So there's that answer. The second question was, could Prescott put in money? There was some service here at one point in time. It went away. Could they have helped to fund that? The simple answer is yes, but there is a more complex answer.
People Who Care take you to shopping and doctors. If you want to go to a movie, you have no way of going there with any of the charity organizations. If I happen to be fortunate enough to hire a lady one day a week. So if I want to go to a store that the place where I live won't take me, she'll take me. My son, unfortunately, works all the time. He's not retired yet. So, but if I want to go to a movie, it costs me a lot of money to pay somebody to drive me and sit in a movie and then go to a restaurant, which fortunately I can still do. But not everybody can do it.
Absolutely. So the idea of getting to places other than work, to shopping, that's all posed here. So I think I'm not hearing a whole lot more tweaks to what we've presented. It sounds like we're close. So we'll take this information back. We'll resolve it to get it into the final report and go from there. Give
just
you the last word.
On the blue route, when you bring them in and then you go back, because they're not going to be ready by the time you go back, because I assume you're going back on the same blue route going back into Chino. They're not going to have time to get back, and that was the issue we had before. So they have to wait 3 to 4 hours before that bus comes back through to pick them up, to take them back to Chino. So that's my biggest issue with that. And we already did that once, and it didn't work.
So I suspect everybody gets the concept there. You have to drive the bus into Prescott, then you have to go back to Chino Valley, you gotta do your 30-minute circulation, then you gotta come back.
Right.
If you got off in Prescott, you're waiting for that bus to come back, and that is... Yeah.
Because it's only 3 times a day that you have this route going now. I mean, that's on the new system. So they would have to wait even a longer period of time. And that's why we tried to shorten it up so that they had a little bit of time to shop. And then we would come back around to pick them up and drop them off where they needed to go.
So, and I think that's you know, this question of like, who are you trying to serve, right? So if we want to get people in for an 8 o'clock shift in Prescott, then we need to time the service to get in to 8 o'clock. And then if there's a noon shuttle, that means somebody who has an appointment would be in Prescott for 4 hours, right? And so maybe that's a little bit longer. And we're not proposing specific times, but the idea is that if we have 3 trips from Chino Valley to Prescott, that 2 of those would be a commute. So one would be getting people in at 8 and then returning back to Chino Valley maybe at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, something like that. And then we can use the midday trip. We could schedule it to give people, you know, so that they have 3 hours in the morning or 5 hours in that. You know, we can play with that a little bit. But again, I think we're really trying to, it's hard, right? I mean, everybody wants to have their own car that can take them where they want to go whenever they can go. Like many of us have been fortunate enough to have that privilege. But with the public transportation system, we're really trying to balance needs and do the best that we can to get as many people as possible. And that does mean, unfortunately, that some people might have to wait. Or they might prefer, if you live in Dewey-Humboldt, you might want to go shopping on Tuesday. But if you need to take the bus, you're going to have to wait till Wednesday. And all of that is just about the compromise and the balancing of spending public money to provide a service with, and then people need to just sort of say, they need to schedule around it a little bit. And if, you know, if you share a car, that's the same kind of thing that happens. But our goal, and I think probably everybody in this room, is we want to start with a system, because I think everybody would agree that those buses need to have passengers in them when they start to operate, or this won't last very long. And so we need to schedule service at the time that it's going to be the most useful. And it does mean, unfortunately, that some people might not get to use it the first year. And it might, we might need to be in 3 years before we can expand it until 8 o'clock at night, or maybe even 10 p.m. when it really needs to run until. But that is part of, you know, walking and then running, or crawling and then walking and then running, and building a system that, you know, we hit the peak, the most people that we can get, and we provide clear, consistent, easy to use service, and then we build on that, and we start to pick up some of those people who we didn't get to the first time around. But if we try to do everything all at once, we might get ahead of ourselves. And so those are some of the trade-offs that we've been talking about and trying to balance with this option. And then, yes?
But you're not answering my question. Till you get this going, can you get the buses to pick people up at their home and take them where they want to go and pick them up? Well, the movie like is an hour and a half. Say, we'll come back in 2 hours. Can you do that meanwhile?
Yes, yeah, so, and this system is, if you live in Prescott or Prescott Valley, yes. If you live in Chino Valley or Dewey-Humboldt, no.
Well, I'm in Prescott now.
So if you're in Prescott, then you could go to the, you could call a demand response vehicle. It would take you to the movies. And then if you said you wanted to be picked up 2 hours later, you could schedule that and get home. But
well, how come nobody knows about it?
Because this isn't going yet, Sarah. We're trying to get it's this working. I think she's talking now.
Yeah, this is our service. Oh, right now? Yeah, no.
No.
You can't do that. Because it's this idea that it's a general public service. And right now, the nonprofit organizations, they tend to prioritize getting people to doctor's appointments, getting people the basic services that they need. And so those quality of life trips, which are really important, they get pushed down.
But what about the unimportant?
Well, the exception is if you do live along the YRT blue route or red route, it does go to the movies, you can do that. So it's no unless.
So it's still not beneficial.
Not now. We don't have this going. We're trying to get this moving.
So it's 11 o'clock, so I guess I just want to take a show of hands with this service design. So we will look at two additional options. One is to add more service in Chino Valley during on the Monday through Saturday so that we replace some of those service hours that are lost by YRT service. And then also we'll look into the cost effectiveness of going till 8 p.m. But do you think that generally this concept is about right?
No.
So why don't, if you think yes, go ahead and raise your hand. All right, so most of you, but not all of you. Yeah. Okay. So why don't we take a short break? So it's 11, and you know we're going to talk about funding next. So
going to take me to the movies.
Yeah. So we'll come back in about 10 minutes. So 11:10.
So I'm no further ahead than I was.